someone's modifying a pristine vehicle and doing, you know, a body kit like that in that instance, hurt the value of the vehicle, you know, normally.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, with the attachment to RWB and Nakai, the popularity of the body kit and the RWB name has added value to the vehicles for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that there's some things that you could easily look at and say that that increases the value. And I guess, look, I guess when it comes down to modifications, it's, to me, it's always been, no matter what you did as far as builds, modifications always became one of those things that was very, very in the eye of the beholder, right? It, to me, it's like when you build a house and you put a really very specific paint color on a wall, right? It doesn't mean that that somebody's not going to walk into the house and fall in love with it and want to buy the house. But it means that there may be a lot more people that walk in and decide not to buy the house because of the color, right?
Sure. Yep.
And so I think that's always been the way I've seen vehicle modifications. Now, I also look at vehicle modifications in two different types. There's, to me, the ones that are, you know, just full out disregard for trying to retain certain, you know, advantageous pieces of the vehicle in the attempt to do something, right? Yeah. It could be something like, you know, I cut up the car, I do all this cool stuff because I want to make this thing wide body.
Yeah.
Now, even if you do it the right way, you may find somebody that's not going to want a wide body, or they don't appreciate the look of that wide body kit. But so you take a risk there, right?
Yep.
But then there's other modifications, I think, that can be done really tastefully, and they seem to always help the modification. I mean, always help the resale value of the car, right?
Yeah.
For example, you know, when you, if you get an R34 and you put, well, you can R34, 33, 32, it doesn't really matter. But I guess the point I'm trying to make is if you put Nismo parts on the car, you're always going to have, like, they're not going to ever devalue.
Yeah, it's almost like that OEM plus that we always kind of harp
right.
on, is that it still keeps that feeling of what Nissan was going for, just improves upon it.
Right. So, it's very, to me, it's also similar along with like the Mantai stuff for the Porsche. You know what I mean? Like that stuff is, I mean, big, big, big dollar stuff.
But do you consider a BBI exhaust on a Porsche like a loss, or do you still consider that something that you go and look at this, you know, super clean 997 turbo, let's say,
yep,
and it has a BBI exhaust on it and it has a set of Ohlins coilovers, does that depreciate the value, or does that still keep the value high because those are quality products that improve the performance of the vehicle and the audio note, let's be honest, but it also does cut down on some restrictions. So
to me, that's an eye of the beholder thing, right? For example, I think there's some modifications that have been so widely accepted and they've become part of almost the ethos of that car. For example, you know, you get a really, you know, amazing, let's say you get a really clean 997 Carrera. And you decide you're going to put like, you know, GT3 bumpers on it and stuff, and you're buying OE GT3 bumpers as expensive as it is, and you're putting an GT3, you know, RS lid style type of, you know, but all quality pieces. Do I think that that enhances the value of the car? Yes, but do I think that there's going to be certain people that are going to be like, you modified this car, you took it away from being original? Absolutely. But that's kind of the trade-off you get with doing modifications.
Do you think, though, that hurts the resale? Like, so do you think you're going to get your money back out of that project? So if you
no.
go in, so it's a money loss at from the go.
If we're specifically talking about GT3 bumpers on a Carrera, you're not going to be, like, in other words, if it costs you, let's say it costs you $8,000, $9,000, and I may be a little, I might be off here, but I do know that those bumpers go for thousands of dollars, right? Let's say I get those bumpers, you know, right from Porsche, put them on my car, paint match them, they look, you know, looks great, fits on the car. Do I think that, you know, if I spent, let's say I get them for $8,000 or $9,000, do I think that I'm going to be able to add $8,000 or $9,000 on top of the price of the car for whatever value it is? No, not at all.
Do you think it's going to take that out of it, though, also? Do you think that somebody, you're going to have less eyes on it at that point, and that's going to hurt you for the resale eventually?
In that particular case, I'm going to say that for every person that is not against it, there's going to be probably 7 or 8 people that would be with it. So, okay. So in that particular example, and like, look, I mean, if you have the money to be able to put like, you know, I was just watching, I mean, this is in my head because I was just watching a Match Armstrong thing. He he was taking his G2 DRS and he was upgrading it to some of the Manti parts, right? And that's a company that has a large ownership, like Porsche has a large ownership in.
I was going to say, they have a controlling stake or something like that,
something
right?
Something like that. Okay. But the parts that they're putting on there are just wild and the cost is just wild. So I really think like stuff like that, I think, you know, some AMG instances where you're putting on, different AMG parts onto a Mercedes, maybe they didn't come with it. I think that, you know, and there's been brands that have been accepted under that flag, even though if they don't have ownership, right? Like I think about BMW with a Dynan exhaust, right? Mm-hmm. Like yep. To me, I've, you know, as long as it's not obnoxious, I mean, are there going to be people that will look at a BMW that has a Dynan aftermarket exhaust on it and be like, I don't really want that because maybe it's the noise, maybe it's because I just wanted to buy a stock car, maybe it's because it gives people the illusion that the car was raced or beat on. But I do think you're going to have a fair amount of people who will be like, oh, that's a really clean, nice option for that car.
I think you're seeing there. That more now also with like a lot of the BMW culture that's coming out. A lot of the, you know, they're very big into bolt-on modifications. It's not about purity as much as you saw with like the E30, E36, and E46 crowd, where it was a lot of that factory crack. These guys are going high horsepower and things like that on the street all the time. So all these cars are coming with some sort of modifications on them when you're buying them secondhand. Most of the time, maybe. You're lucky if it even has cats in it.
Well, maybe. I'm not 100% sure about that, but I will say that I equate like the BMW group, I think, and some of these, you know, some of these other, you know, like let's say whether it be Porsches or some of these other cars that are kind of in that performance, luxury performance or sport tuning, luxury kind of thing. I do think that they're a little bit more accepting of certain things because it reminds me of like if you would have went back to the Volkswagen scene in like the early 2000s, okay. When Mark IVs were popular and Mark Vs were really starting to become popular and before we really got to Mark VI territory.
Okay.
When you would go to a show and you'd walk around and see those cars, like they would have a mod list, and I don't know why they did this, but they'd have a mod list that was like 2.5 miles long.
Oh, kind of like the Corvette guys with like the sign next to sure. the whole list.
And you would go there and you would look at these modifications and you would look at the car and be like, the car looks bone stock.
But that's that OEM plus. That was like the Volkswagen OEM plus lifestyle. It was like, oh, I'm going to take door handles from one car, a trunk boot
and you piece would see, from another. Right, yeah, we got this part from like, you know, got these headlights from a Jetta in Africa. And you'd be like, what? Yeah. Like, you know?
Yeah.
But I think that they're... You know, there's, you know, it's funny. It's like we don't think about the modifications that actually get done overseas, but like in Japan, USDM stuff is very popular. Like I'm talking about like in the sense of there's a whole group of people over there that just want to build USDM looking cars, right? Mm-hmm. So like we run over there to get our, you know, clear taillights and blinkers, you know, and turn signals and all this stuff and different parts. And they're coming over here to get the ones with the ambers in it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
They're putting DOT-approved taillights back in as we're taking them
just,
out.
Yeah, there. Just like different things like that. And I think a lot of that just has to do with everybody wants what they don't have.
Okay.
Right? It's about being able to change something and be different. But yeah, I mean, they're definitely like when we start to circle back to like, you know, some of the cars like the, you know, the RWBs. You know, I believe that those cars have, depending on what the car is as a base, and I said this the first time, right? Like, I think I don't really want to go back to this clip, but that clip did get a lot of traction. And so, like, I feel like it's my, I deserve the right to address it. So,
now that it's 6 months, you think you're safe? You can go back?
No, I don't think it's safe. But I do think that there's a, you know, when we clip things out, there's a context that gets missed, right? Correct. And my point wasn't that I think what he does is sacrilege. What I think he does that increases the price of the cars is very good for one group of people. Like they, and if you love that, and if that's something you want, and you look at it like it's a piece of art, then I absolutely understand why you would do it. My point in that conversation was that I personally would be able to, and I said this in the clip, but I would be able to do it if I found a Porsche that maybe, you know, blown engine, like body was maybe in some rough shape, or it wasn't the cleanest example, or it was a high mileage example, and I was going to change a lot of stuff. I'd be fine with doing it there. I wasn't prepared to take, let's say, a really, clean, really vintage car and just cut it up for the sake of putting that stuff on there. Now, how will that stuff age? I mean, obviously it's got a track record already.
Yeah.
I think what he does is an art. Like, it's an art.
Yeah.
And I think if you're prepared to own an art piece, I think it's awesome. You know, and it's fun. It's like, you know, well, obviously I'm friendly with Brian Scotto, and he had one of the first ones that they had done. But even he pointed out that the car that the Nakae-san did was different, because a lot of those parts were, I don't remember if he said they were pre-production or whatever it was. So his wide body isn't as wide.
Okay.
His car was put together with some other things. They didn't caulk the thing. I mean, there was a little bit more, the build quality is a little bit different on Brian's build than I think most of the cars are today. Now, I'm not saying bad, good, different, things like that, but
it was just different.
Yeah, and I also think that there becomes cars that take on their own personality, right? Like, I think about it for me in my days, I think about some of the Busher 2Gs and the bad Bish. Yeah. Well, but I guess what I'm saying is, like, those cars, you know, they went on, like, I think about, like, you know, John Shepard's, 1G, right? These are cars that will pick up a value all in their own just because they become heroes.
Yeah.
Right? People look at them as heroes. So when you get your chance to own a hero, there's a high price tag. Now, does that mean that everybody that wants an Evo is going to want to buy that one?
No. So circling back to the Porsche thing, actually, I found this interesting. You've worked in the past with the gentleman who puts the K-Series into the Porsches.
Oh, Nick.
Nick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't remember his name. I assumed it was Nick.
Yeah,
but I wasn't sure.
Super good dude.
So I always had a interesting thought process on this. So you're able to find, say, a blown engine 996.
Yeah.
Rebuilding
996
that.
996 or
997? 996s, because didn't he have the...
He's a 996. 997. Okay. He's a 997.
Okay, so then maybe I think
996s are a little tougher, from what I understand from Nick, to do like a K swap into.
Okay,
but he has a 997.
Okay, so we'll go with that generation. You know, 996, 997, yep. that time period of Porsche, yep. Blown engine. Obviously, getting everything to rebuild that engine becomes a very costly endeavor, especially if you threw.
We're talking about the Porsche. We're talking about
Porsche. Was it flat six? 3.6 liter. Yep. So finding those parts could become very costly and difficult. Now, do you see the K series being put into those, not necessarily hurting the value of the vehicle, but do you think that it becomes something more feasible for your average consumer to pick up one, throw a K series in, and have something fun to drive around on the weekends?
Okay. So let's break that down.
Okay.
Because there's a few things to unpack. Do I think it hurts the value of the car? I do.
Okay.
I think from when only time will tell if we get 20 years down the road and people that have clean 997s that had blown engines that do K swaps that get everything to work, only time will tell if that becomes something that becomes accepted, you know, over time, and the value continues to rise on those cars. Now, I will tell you that my gut feeling is if you were to put a very, very clean OE 997 comparatively, you know, in 15 years from now with a K-swapped modified, you know, 997, I do think that the OE one is going to be worth more, if that's a concern. Now, let's go back to the thing that I think you were kind of getting at, which is like, does the K series make those cars more savable, ability to own?
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Can we make them survivors if we do this swap? Does it make it, is there value in making it a survivor?
Well, I think there becomes some real alternatives there that allow people that have, those engines, unless you had one of the Metzger engines that were in like the turbo, in some of the GT3 cars or GT3 RSs or whatever it was. I may be slightly off there, but to make sure, but you know what I mean? Those engines weren't the same and they weren't known for having the bore scoring issue or, you know, having a lot of those, you know, kind of things that plagued those years. And I've read a lot of conspiracy theories. I guess they're conspiracy theories. A lot of theories on why certain engines develop bore scoring. There's a whole theory that has to do with, you know, the cars that are in the Northeast. It has to do with them being exposed to cold. I don't know.
That's what I always heard also, was that it was like temperature differentials caused the piston to dry, right, and stuff like that. So that's the same thing I've heard.
Yeah, and it's weird because I feel like they're more prone to just certain cylinders. Mm-hmm. And so that puts another question, and I've read some stuff about that. But I guess what I'm saying is, like, do I think that, like, if you own that car and that engine goes, $20,000 repair, you know, pretty easily. And like you said, depending on how much damage does, you know, to, you know, that can be certainly a big problem. And those engines are notoriously more difficult. That's not the right word. They're more intricate to know and to put together and build well. Right.
Yeah.
So you go, when you have to rebuild those, you go to a very specialized person, and those people tend to have long waiting lists. Right. So I think that, you know, could the idea of owning one of those cars and not worrying about the engine going, knowing that you have an alternative, or being in that position where you're like, man, it's 20 stacks to be able to rebuild this engine, or, you know, maybe for like under 10, I could potentially swap a really nice, you know, K series in. Or a K series turbo with a turbo,
yeah,
and I can get everything to work exactly the way, you know, Porsche intended it to, and I have something that's serviceable and parts that are really affordable.
It checks a lot of boxes. That's the problem. It checks a lot of boxes. And that's why I wanted to bring that one up, is like that one, and then the S2000 with the K series has also been burning into my mind, because the F20 suffers from a lot of that same problem. You need the guys that know what they're doing with it. You know, you have to rev out the engine just to get performance out of it. The K24, you get the torque down low.
Yeah.
You get a lot more performance and usable range out of the car. Yeah, you lose a little bit of RPM, but what's, you know,
sorry. Well, even Nick Steneford, that we know, like, you know, he's done that stuff too, you know, K swapping his S2000. I think the reason that will bode well amongst enthusiasts in the future is the fact that, like, you know, again, we used a Honda engine. We used a very popular Honda engine. We put in an engine that always has a great reputation, right? There's not going to be a lot of it that's going to be like, I bastardized this platform.
And that's what I think is the most important about that whole reselling of a modified car is, how extreme did you go away from what makes the spirit of the car something that they want? So if you want to go buy an S2000, the K series doesn't really, going from a F series to a K series doesn't ruin what that vehicle is. But if you went ahead and said, through a big LS with a supercharger on it, and now you're making 800 wheel
junk,
the car is uncontrollable. It loses what it was. And don't get me wrong, it would be a great drag car, but it loses what it was to be an S2000
The reason I'm going to kind of segue a little bit away from that, because I think you're going to find some people to actually disagree with you, because the LS was, when you put the weights next to him, next to a K24 and the LS, I think you're going to have some people that are going to start to go that direction. But here's what I'm going to say. Here's what I will. But so I'm going to go away from that point real quick to not get lost in the weeds, right? But I do think that there's also a huge difference between putting an LS into an S2000, because you no longer have the DNA of that car, right? And I also think that, you know, when you look under the hood of that car, especially in even an enthusiast collector's age, it to me was no different than maybe some of the guys back in the day that had, let's say, you know, the early Celicas. They would take out, you know, I forget which what the exact engine code, but they would put those 18 RGs in, right? Okay. And so you're not gonna you're if you were a numbers matching collector type person, that's not your car.
Yeah.
But if you're almost anybody else, that was a real upgrade, and it's a time period upgrade, and it's something that people really can, like, they look at it, and it's, and to them, it's just a, it's even better. If not just as good, right?
I mean, it's like buying a Honda Civic with a B series already, you know, a B18 already in it out of an Integra. Like, if you look at it that way, it's a come up. You know, like, oh, I don't have a single cam in here anymore. I don't have even the SI engine in here. I have an Integra engine in here. And it's that little bit of difference. Like, and I can see where that's coming from. And I think that's hard, because what modifications do add value and which ones hurt the car's value is very subjective, I think, is a big issue.
Well, I think, yeah, of course, subjectiveness, right?
Yeah.
But I also think you're going, you know, it's funny. It's like we look at cars as they age. The further, the older they get, the more time judges what's done to the car. For example, I'll give you a good example about this. There are a lot of people right now that are looking for early 90s, late 90s, early 2000s JDM type cars. And they're trying to find that vintage type parts. They want to put the fiberglass wild bumpers that I was super happy that we left in the Fast and Furious.
We just talked
days.
About this last week. This Did was we? Great. Oh yeah, this is what Matt and I were talking about. You missed it.
But what I'm saying is, I think that there's you know, there's a whole realm of people that are trying to grab a time period almost as in a time capsule-like way.
Yeah.
They're trying to retain a build and develop these cars as they were in their heyday.
Okay.
Okay? If, you know, heyday.
Yeah,
right?
No, I get it.
And I think for the right people, those cars will hold some really significant value. I think we've seen that with muscle cars and hot rods, you know, them doing certain modifications, and some of those modifications, because they were so time period, like people that would go back, you know, and take a now and build a gasser.
Oh yeah.
Right? You're not building anything that's OE related at all. You're building something that's time period correct. And you know what? There's a popular segment of people that will remember that car from their, you know, when they were younger, and there's a time element, and there's a what do we call that, like
nostalgic factor?
Yeah, right, exactly. There's a nostalgic factor that allows people to really be like, you know what, I gotta have that car. And for those people, the value will be there. And for the person that wants to buy a, you know, very clean, original 57 Chevy, that's not their car.
No. And I think I get that we're kind of now becoming the old guys where that is more acceptable, that you'll have the demographic split where you have the OE, don't touch it, leave it alone, I want to collect the original. And then you'll have the guy that's like, I'll take the Fast and the Furious R34 Skyline and drive that around. And that's kind of where you have that separation, where even though that car, I'm using it as an example because it is like the equivalent of a gasser from our time period.
Yep.
It's over the top. It screams, but yet somebody still wants to buy that because of what it means to them.
Yep. Yes. No, I don't disagree with that. I think it's an interesting point. And, you know, it'd be interesting to hear what people out there think about, you know, kind of, you know, what modifications do you feel ends up increasing a car's value? Like, where do you think that line is? And again, I think the line's super hard to always put in play. And I think you're going to be able to come up with really specific examples of maybe things in the past that now, if you have those things. And, you know, look, I mean, from a very hardcore JDM perspective, like, you look at some of the, you know, the really rare older HKS parts that people are putting on some of these, you know, GTRs and stuff like that. And, you know, and you're like, whoa, and they're paying big dollars for these parts, but that is old technology. If you wanted to go get something that's more efficient, you could easily do it way cheaper. But there is something about having those parts on the car that's just as collectible about the car
as it is about those parts.
Yeah, I'm partial to my Blitz blow-off valve for that reason. I know that there's better blow-off valves out there on the market, but there's just something about that sound that just draws me back to that time period.
Okay.
So
that's fair. Everybody's allowed to have their thing.
Yeah, everyone has their own thing. Yeah. But we'd like to see what you guys in the comments.
For sure.
Yeah, put down in the comments what kind of parts you guys think are adding to the value of the vehicle or hurting the value of the vehicle.
Yeah, what kind of modifications, what kind of things? Is there a line? Where do you draw the line at, you know, whatever? And, you know, look, and here's the thing. For a lot of people out there, I know this comment's coming. You know, we don't buy cars for their resale value, right? We buy cars to drive them.
Correct.
I get it. But when you have these cars and you plan to own them forever, sometimes, especially as we get older, we start to think about, well, if I want to cut this car up, should I not?
Yeah, 100%.
Right. So, interesting. Leave your thoughts below, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Peace.